We envision the pressure continuing to ramp up. There will not be any let up on pressure. We are leaving the door open to engagement.
Openness and toughness characterize Korean diplomacy. It's Monday, February 19th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Pakistan wants to build a wall and the U.S. to pay for it. A new year brings an old battle against poverty. Japanese trucks driving themselves. Babies and brainwaves. New delivery robots. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A senior State Department official has cast doubt on the idea that the United States can carry out a limited military strike on North Korea, a proposal that has become known as the Bloody Nose Strategy. North Korea's Olympic charm offensive appears to be working to boost its image among many people. While the United States is indicating new openness to dialogue, Washington is also continuing its maximum pressure campaign against Pyongyang. Susan Thornton is President Trump's nominee for Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs.
We envision the pressure continuing to ramp up. There will not be any let-up on pressure. We are leaving the door open to engagement, as you rightly stated, and we want that engagement to consist of one issue, which is denuclearization, our overarching goal for this policy.
Thornton said it is her understanding that there's no bloody nose strategy in the Korean Peninsula. She indicated diplomacy is the number one priority. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert says it's up to North Korea to stop nuclear aggression and engage in talks.
We're leaving the door open to engagement. We want engagement to consist of one issue, that is denuclearization. Our policy hasn't changed. Our policy remains the same. The overall goal is denuclearization.
While Washington is not advocating for a regime change, analysts like Bonnie Glazer at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington say the United States needs to talk to China about the safe disposition of the country's nuclear weapons in preparing for any scenario.
One of the reasons we want to talk with China about this issue is that there are some testing facilities that North Korea has that are not very far from China's border, within about 100 kilometers. And so the United States believes that China would not want U.S. forces heading towards China's border in the event of a crisis.
A week ago, a top Chinese diplomat reassured U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson that Beijing is committed to applying pressure against North Korea over its nuclear weapons program. We thank VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching for contributing this report. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. U.S. Navy in South China Sea. We're here no matter China's military buildup. Fire erupts at major Tibetan monastery. No injuries reported. Critical Australia water sharing plan is on brink of collapse. Ex-Khmer Rouge official converts to Christianity guided by pastor she once enslaved. Ghani vows repatriation of all Afghans in Pakistan in 2 years. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Pakistan is building a wall along its border with Afghanistan and wants U.S. President Donald Trump to help pay for it. Pakistan Foreign Minister Khawaja Mohammad Asif told the Bloomberg News Agency last week it won't cost the U.S. much. The war is costing them much more. Only a fraction of the wall is complete because of money problems, but Asif said he still expects it to be finished by next year. Asif described the 2,300-kilometer border between Pakistan and Afghanistan as a free-for-all, saying as many as 70,000 people cross every day, fueling terrorism, drug trafficking, and militant activities. Asif also said the return of more than 2 million Afghan refugees from Pakistan is essential for peace and wants the United States to help with a repatriation. Donald Trump infuriated Pakistan last month when he cut off nearly $2 billion in aid, accusing Islamabad of not doing enough to combat terrorism. Pakistani politicians called Trump's words insulting and humiliating. VOA Asia's Ira Melman talked with Michael Kugelman, the Asia Program Deputy Director and Senior Associate for South Asia at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, about the opinion that the U.S. will pay for the Pakistan-Afghanistan wall.
Well, my reaction is that it's not going to happen. I think that, among other things, President Trump is having enough trouble getting funding for the wall that he wants to build along the border with Mexico here. And I think that given the current climate in U.S.-Pakistan relations, I think that he's not going to, the Pakistanis would not get much takers for that request. So I think at the end of the day, this request, so to speak, may have been made more in jest than anything else from the Pakistanis, essentially riffing on the fact that, you know, the issue of the border wall with Mexico has been a big political issue here in the United States. And I think that, you know, I really don't think we should take this request that seriously.
Now, they have been building the wall, is that correct?
They have, and in fact, I saw it firsthand. I was in Pakistan in North Waziristan right along the border back in November, and I got a good look at the wall, which, quite frankly, it's a pretty modest-looking affair. It's probably about 10, 12 feet high. According to the Pakistanis, there are a lot of technical gadgets that you can't actually see that involve sensors and things like that to prevent, to ensure that people cannot come across uninhibited, so to speak. But yeah, the wall is being built, and according to the Pakistanis, the entire border with Afghanistan, which is pretty big, will be complete essentially by the end of 2019, which is a pretty ambitious task. But indeed, the border is, the fence is being built.
Is it just being built by Pakistan?
Yes, that's correct. Afghanistan is not contributing to this border fence, and I think one of the main reasons for that is that Afghanistan does not recognize the border. You know, this is it's called the Durand Line. It's an artificial border that was put up some years ago during the colonial era. Afghanistan has never accepted it. Pakistan, of course, does, and I think that the way Afghanistan feels that if it were to start partnering in this fencing project, if it were to start putting up fences and walls itself, that would essentially be legitimizing this border that it has never recognized.
What are they hoping the wall will accomplish?
Well, I mean, for Pakistan, their view is that they've essentially eliminated most of the terrorist threats inside Pakistan, and the only terrorist threats that remain are those that are, in fact, based across the border in Afghanistan. And I think this is in many ways true. I mean, Pakistan argues that when you have terrorist attacks in Pakistan these days, they're committed by militants that are based in Afghanistan and basically come across the border. So Pakistan thinks that if you put up the border wall, these terrorists will not be able to come over from Afghanistan, and therefore you will not have terrorist attacks inside Pakistan. And it's a fair argument, though, you know, first of all, there are still terrorists inside Pakistan. Not too many of them, though, that would actually target Pakistan. Most of those that target Pakistan, mainly the Pakistani Taliban, they've been eliminated in counterterrorism offenses, or they've gone across the border into Afghanistan. But, you know, it's going to take a long time to get this border entirely fenced. And even when it happens, hey, you're out there, the terrain is extremely rough and very difficult to completely close off. And the Pakistanis have admitted they will not be able to fence the entire border. So unfortunately, you'll still be able to have militants come across it.
Do the Afghans think that they have terrorists coming from Pakistan into Afghanistan?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. I mean, there's a huge disconnect when it comes to how the two countries look at the terrorist threats in the region. Afghanistan insists that you have terrorists that are based in Pakistan and coming over to stage attacks in Afghanistan. They basically accuse Pakistan of doing the same thing that Pakistan accuses Afghanistan of doing. Now, I would argue there's much more evidence and much more history of terrorists in Pakistan staging attacks in Afghanistan than there is of terrorists based in Afghanistan staging attacks inside Pakistan. But, you know, what the Pakistanis would say is to the Afghans is, well, you know, if you're concerned about that, don't be. We're building this fence, and soon enough, you know, by the end of next year, you won't have to worry about terrorists coming over from our side. You'll just have to worry about the terrorists on your side.
So is Afghanistan happy about the wall?
No, I don't think it is. I think that to the extent that they see it as being a useful counterterrorism tactic, then they would be happy if they believe that it will keep Pakistanis from terrorists in Pakistan from going across the border to stage attacks. That would be pleasing to them. But I think at the end of the day, the Afghans are not happy with this border fence because they believe that Pakistan is trying to further cement the legitimacy of a border that Afghanistan has never recognized. And the other thing is that, you know, you do have a lot of cross-border activity that does not involve terrorism. You know, you have many Afghans that go see friends and they go to doctor's appointments. Kids actually go to school across the border. So, you know, for humanitarian reasons, it could be pretty devastating for this border to be put up. Now, when I was in North Waziristan in November, Pakistani military told me that there will be allowances made for humanitarian reasons, meaning that, you know, it will be very easy for those that are going over to Pakistan for humanitarian reasons, for medical reasons, for education reasons, they'll still be able to go, which is great. But, still, I think it's going to add a pretty significant layer of complexity. If you're going to have this big fence over the entire border, it may make it difficult for these Afghans to actually get into Pakistan.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Michael Kugelman, the Asia Program Deputy Director and Senior Associate for South Asia at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington. Happening now in Asia, three people have been arrested on suspicion of helping a billionaire jeweler to defraud one of India's largest banks of millions. Nirav Modi, a diamond broker and luxury jeweler to celebrities, is being investigated in a $44 million fraud case at Punjab National Bank. No charges have been filed so far. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's Monday morning. We're glad you're starting your week with us here at VOA Asia. The Chinese Lunar New Year, or Spring Festival, is well underway. The two-week-long celebration is a time to honor deities and ancestors. It is also a family time, often punctuated by fireworks and lion dances. Homes are decorated with the color red, symbolizing good fortune. The Chinese zodiac moves in a 12-year cycle, and this is the Year of the Dog. People born during the year are described as independent, sincere, communicative, and loyal. President Xi Jinping, fresh off of a second five-year term by the National Congress last year, has emphasized three main policy goals of growth, stability, and reform. During a recent trip to the southwest province of Sichuan, Mr. Xi vowed to banish the ghost of poverty after pledging in 2015 to lift tens of millions out of poverty by the year 2020. Willie Lam, adjunct professor at the Center for China Studies at the Chinese University of Hong Kong, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the New Year is a time for reflection by the Communist Party leadership on the political and social situation, specifically whether the rich-poor gap is narrowing.
So far, despite pledges by President Xi Jinping that all Chinese would be lifted out of the poverty line within just 4 or 5 years, that is massive social inequality. The Gini coefficient officially at 0.73 is actually, according to Chinese sociologists, close to 0.6, which is a highly combustible level, which could prompt massive social unrest.
President Xi, as you indicated, was in the southwest of the country in Sichuan province. He said, in the past, we did have ghosts, the ghosts of ignorance, backwardness, and poverty. It almost sounds like Lyndon Johnson's Great Society of the 1960s here in the U.S.
Indeed. When Xi Jinping first came to power, he raised the banner of the Chinese dream. And more recently, he mentioned the two important goals, particularly the watershed year 2049, the 100th birthday of the establishment of the People's Republic, when China will have become a superpower, will have closed the gap with the U.S. However, it is important to note that while everywhere we see signs of prosperity along the so-called Gold Coast, stretching from Beijing down to Shenzhen, close to Hong Kong, in the inner and particularly the western provinces, there is still palpable poverty. And despite guarantees in the Constitution that all Chinese would have 15 years free education, the situation in accessible hilly regions is different. There are many children, particularly those who are left at home because their parents are working in the cities, who only have education up to 8-9 years, particularly for girls who are traditionally denied opportunities. Above all, Xi Jinping has failed to honor his pledge to abolish the so-called household residence system, which is a kind of a Chinese-style apartheid, if you will, whereby those Chinese who are born in the hilly regions, in the poor provinces, cannot legally move to live in the big cities. So that is still massive inequality in China. And I think as the country becomes more visible internationally, as China's GDP is about to overtake that of the U.S., and also as Chinese as a whole are more educated than generations before, I think people will be asking questions about the political system and in particular, possibilities for political participation whereby the people have a chance to voice their views about these massive inequalities in the country.
Willie Lam describes Xi Jinping as a closet Maoist who believes in the Leninist system of concentration of power at the top. He warned that the failure of the political system to keep pace with the demands of a growing middle class, including a say in their future, could generate tension between the country's aristocracy and still poor peasants and migrant workers, leading to social unrest. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
News from VOA Asia. In one of the world's most livable cities, real estate prices in Wellington, New Zealand soared by more than 18% in 2017. Now the new labor-led government may ban non-residents from purchasing existing properties, blaming them for the runaway prices and squeezing many Kiwis out of the market. There's room for everyone at VOA Asia Facebook. Stop by anytime. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, four large truck manufacturers in Japan, including Mitsubishi and Isuzu, have recently road tested a form of driverless technology. The big rigs are all equipped with a type of adaptive cruise control system as a step toward removing the one feature you normally see in the cab, a driver. Behind the wheel of this report is VOA's Arash Arabasadi.
These trucks almost drive themselves. They're equipped with something called cooperative adaptive cruise control. Basically, sensors in the front maintain a 30-meter distance from vehicles up ahead.
It is the first time in the world for trucks from different makers to carry a CACC test on a public road.
Japan tested this trucking technology on a public highway. Officials say the onboard tech is good for business in a country with an aging population and a declining number of truckers.
To have driverless trucks drive next to other cars will help solve driver shortage in the trucking industry and will increase the industry's productivity.
Swedish auto manufacturer Volvo successfully conducted a similar test in March of 2017 using three of its own trucks. Industry officials say this is the world's first such test involving different manufacturers. And while drivers steered the trucks in this test, officials say they hope to have a fully automated fleet by 2022. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia, the year of the dog has just begun, but a newspaper ad by Malaysia's trade ministry wished people a happy new year with a picture of a rooster emitting a dog's bark in Chinese. The ministry apologized for the, quote, technical error. The apology is complicated, as some Malaysian Muslims believe dogs are unclean animals. You'll get off to a great New Year's start by visiting VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, when two people see things the same way, it's often said that they are operating on the same wavelength. That concept recently got a scientific stamp of approval when researchers at the University of Cambridge found that adults and infants' brain waves synchronize when they look at each other's eyes while singing a nursery rhyme. We get in sync with VOA's George Pudich.
Wheels on the bus go round and round.
Helen Harrison softly sings a nursery rhyme to her 8-month-old daughter, Anya, while looking straight into her eyes. Her daughter returns the gaze. A moment later, Harrison sings the same rhyme, looking away. Mother and baby both wear special skull caps, equipped with sensors that pick up their brain waves and send them to a computer for analysis. Victoria Long heads the baby LINC lab at the University of Cambridge.
This is the first demonstration that babies have these amazing abilities to lock onto adults' brain activity, and we think that this is to do with their ability to detect gaze as a cue for readiness to communicate and readiness to engage.
Brain waves of 36 pairs of infants and adults clearly show the degree of synchronization depends on their eye contact. The surprising discovery was that the greatest synchronization happened when the adult's head was turned away, but her eyes were still locked with the baby's eyes.
When she's looking away, but her head, but her eyes are back this way, it makes her look much more intentional in her meaning to communicate with the infant, because she must be deliberately looking back for some reason. And so we think that increase in intentionality could be what's driving the synchronicity between the pair.
The baby's intentions to communicate were measured by the number and length of vocalizations they made. The babies who vocalized the longest had the strongest synchronization with adults, which scientists say may make learning more effective.
It might be the case that direct eye contact between infants and caregivers stimulates communicative development and language development.
Scientists say the evidence shows that synchronicity between the infant's and adult's brains was greater when both showed greater intention to communicate. George Pudich, VOA News.
E-I-E-I-O. Delivery robots could one day be part of the landscape of cities around the world. Among the latest to be developed is an Italian-made model that drives itself around town to drop off packages. VOA's Deborah Block reports since the machine runs on electricity, its developers say it is an environmentally friendly alternative to fuel-powered delivery vehicles that can cause pollution.
This delivery robot called Yape is making its way around the streets of Cremona in northern Italy. The robot uses sensors and a GPS to maneuver and can travel about 50 kilometers on one charge. Yape was created in response to the expanding urban delivery market, says the robot's co-creator.
Yape can reach its destination in a matter of minutes. It can work for 24 hours in any weather conditions. Because it self-drives on sidewalks and cycling paths, it avoids traffic accidents.
An app tells Yape where to pick up and deliver a package. The Android identifies the sender through a built-in face recognition algorithm. The person receiving the package can use the app to track the robot's movements. Yape sends a message to the recipient with a specific time to pick up the package outside. The machine has surveillance cameras, so if someone tries to steal packages by forcing the lid open, it will send an alert to a remote control center. This Italian tourist likes the delivery robot.
Yes, I would use Yape in place of a human courier, or as an alternative to a van that increases pollution and parking problems.
Enovia is exploring the possibility of using the robot for other purposes, such as transporting objects inside a building or factory.
For example, such as delivering drugs in a hospital or to deliver documents in a library.
The firm hopes to put Yape on the market next year. Deborah Block, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Our program is delivered to you in many different ways, including online through iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also find us streaming each and every day on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. Our favorite method of delivery is always the radio. You can catch us in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia on Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur. Thanks to everyone there who's listening today. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer John Ellison, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, David Bird, and Ira Melman on our VOA Asia team. Also, hi to Vivi Wren, who came back to our studios today. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.